back together again, you and I, for a midweek Wednesday edition of Connecticut Today on September 20th, 2023. I kicked off the show with the latest on the Bridgeport absentee ballot investigation. Connecticut State Republican Party Chair Ben Proto talked about some proposed changes he'd like to see regarding absentee ballot regulations. And Hearst, Connecticut Media editor and columnist Dan Haar also stopped by for his weekly update. And it's upon us yet again, boys and girls, ladies and gents, another fascinating episode of the limited run miniseries Bridgeport. Plug it in anywhere. Apple TV Plus, Paramount Plus, Netflix, Hulu, Peacock, whatever you want to stream it on. It goes on and on. And but the plot now thickens. This story in Hearst, Connecticut Media, Ken Dixon's story. The SEEC, the State Elections Enforcement Commission, today, Wednesday, the 20th, earlier today, has opened a half dozen investigations into events associated with the mayoral primary from a few days ago, including, Ken says here in the story, two referrals from the local police. Of course, at the center of the probes, the municipal video of a woman who deposited, well, something. You and I saw that on the video numerous times. Wanda Jeter has been named now as, I guess, being put on leave. Depositing something into the absentee collection box in front of the Margaret Morton City Hall Annex. The chairman of the State Elections Enforcement Commission, a gentleman named Stephen Penny, voted unanimously to move ahead with the investigations along with the other SEEC members. Now, those investigations include subpoena demands for a variety of absentee ballot records on file in City Hall. Again, according to Ken Dixon's story in Hearst Media, this includes applications and lists of people who collected applications to distribute in the run-up to the primary last week. Now, again, this is starting to get serious here. You know, there have been allegations about this for years and years in Bridgeport, good or bad, true or not. And we saw what happened in 2019 with the possibility of criminal referrals, and now we have this, and there is a video to go along with this. Mr. Penny saying, quote, "These allegations have the effect of undermining the public's trust in free and fair elections, and we take them very seriously." He continued, quote, "They've been docketed, they will be thoroughly investigated, and we will work and are already working with other law enforcement agencies to determine what the facts are and what we learn from them, and when we learn them, the facts will be brought to light." Now, earlier today, Melissa Sheketoff on her program, Melissa in the Morning, Monday through Friday from 5 to 10, right here on WICC, she had both Mayor Ganim on in the 8:35 segment and John Gomes on in the 8:05 segment. Now, some of you may have heard that. Maybe you were busy. You were already at work. So I will be replaying those conversations, the vast majority of those conversations. Can't play the entire thing. They're a little long. We'll do that out of the 3 o'clock news. We will play Melissa's chat with John Gomes. And out of the 3:30 news, we will play the mayor's chat. Okay, so next hour you'll get to hear in depth from both gentlemen. This is the beauty of talk radio here. Free form, long form talk radio in the afternoon. Now, we love our friends at the newspapers. We love our friends on television. But we'll replay Melissa's talks this morning, which went about 15 minutes with each gentleman. That's next hour, out of the news at 3 and out of the news at 3:30. And you'll get a nice, long variety of questions there. And you can judge for yourself. John Gomes and his campaign, back to this Hearst story here, claimed during a Monday news conference, they said in a complaint filed last week with the state that Wanda Jeter Pataki was allegedly, and again, this is all alleged, folks. We have to be careful here for the sake of everyone. She was allegedly seen in municipal security videos placing items in an absentee ballot box outside the government center. Jeter Pataki works in the government center and is vice chair of the Bridgeport Democratic Town Committee. She, this past Monday, was placed on administrative leave pending an investigation. Hearst has not been able, it says here, to reach her, and somebody who responded to a Ring doorbell at her home on Monday declined to comment. Not surprising there. So there it is. So, you know, you have the video now. You have, according to Hearst, a half dozen investigations. You have a video. You have, if you heard from Chris in our news there at the top of the hour, you have one of the most powerful Democrats in the state, House Speaker Matt Ritter, saying, hey, he's going to, you know, in this special session coming up to kind of do some house cleaning things here. He's going to see if we can, if the state can, and I'm sure they can, they'd better allocate some money here to make sure that there is an election monitor and maybe staffers watching the voting in the general election. If the general goes on, we don't know that yet. This could be pending a court-ordered redo of the primary. We don't know. We don't know anything yet. Like I said, though, there's no real rush to get this done. The city's fine. It's running. People are up. They're out and about. They're going to work. They're coming home. They're having dinner. They're enjoying Bridgeport. Businesses open, businesses close. If a judge thinks, and again, we've been told by a bunch of experts here and folks that have been on the inside of this for years, if a judge thinks that there is enough evidence here that a primary needs a do-over, which has happened in the past in some spots, then you simply do it. That's it. You know, we have timelines, yeah, but you know, there's nothing that's, there's nothing, there's no reason other than money. And look, I'm sure if this has to be done, maybe the Bridgeport state governmental delegation here, state house and state senate leaders, they could go and say, hey, can we have some money here from the state, which is fine. Take my state tax money and make it so Bridgeport can get this right. So if it means you delay the November general election, because perhaps, maybe, if a judge thinks that the primary has to be redone, then so be it. Here's the thing, though. And I was talking about this earlier today and talking about this with people earlier today and last night. You would hope now that you have enough evidence here to make a change, and a change that will stick. Now, ultimately, change only happens if the voters want it. I don't care what anybody says, what John Gomes says, what Lamon Daniels says, what Marilyn Moore says, what Mayor Ganim says, what any of the party chairs say, what any state official says, pounding his or her chest. That's a non sequitur. Change only happens if people see enough evidence here and say, okay, maybe this is time for a change. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Now, having said that, I got a comment on one of our posts on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WICC600. And it was to the effect of, and Paul says, I'm not looking at it right now. And that's fine. We invite the comments, and Paul says elections aren't stolen. Well, that's not really what I said. What I said was plays into this situation nicely. You'd better have evidence. I've never said there's no way elections aren't stolen. What I have said is if an election you think it's stolen and you can come up with evidence, then fine. But you better have evidence that can stick. And it looks like, and I'm not saying anything was stolen here, but it certainly looks like we have video evidence here where the person in this video has allegedly been identified. We can see clearly what they're doing. We can put it. There's a time stamp on it. So, again, anything is possible if you have evidence. I said all throughout the stolen election allegations from Trump, I said, okay, that's fine. Give me somebody who's willing to raise their right hand and swear on a Bible under a penalty of perjury if they're lying in front of Congress. Give me somebody who says, yeah, okay, this was a scheme and I took part in it and here's what we did. You give me that. Now, this is not quite what we have here in Bridgeport, but you give me that, and I'll say, fine, yeah, the election was probably stolen in 2020. But until I see that, and I know there are still people pushing that, sorry, not going to happen. Compare what we have at Bridgeport to compare what any evidence we had on a national scale. We never had anybody doing, for example, what John Dean did in Watergate. When Dean got up there and raised his hand and says, yeah, here's what we did. I was on the inside of the plot, and let me read you what happened here. And he went on to read about 200 or 300 pages of testimony over 3 or 4 days. Now, we don't have that here. We had that then, but we don't have that here yet. You never know. All right, so now that we have everything laid out here in Bridgeport, we've heard from the mayor a few times. We've heard from the Gomes campaign. This story's getting the level of coverage it should get from radio and television and print. Where do we go? There's a special session coming up in Hartford. What are some of the things that the Republican Party is going to do and say, hey, we told you so for years about this? We're going to speak with Ben Proto, the state Republican Party chair, in just a minute. Ben, hang on. We'll be right to you. First, Sarah in West Haven has been hanging on. Sarah, good afternoon. How are you?
Fine, thanks. You know, I was listening before and people called in about the movie 2000 Mules.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and I've seen it too. Okay, but it always galls me when you see right outside of City Hall or any time in front of the senior centers or whatever, the ballot boxes just sitting there, you know, not in attendance. Wouldn't it make sense, if it's so important to have a legal voting, wouldn't it make sense to make that a national holiday, okay, where everybody's off so nobody can say, I couldn't get there, I couldn't get the time off? And remember years ago, they used to call you up and say, do you need a ride?
Yeah, I think that still happens, though, Sarah. From what I understand, it depends how big your campaign is and whether you have the people to do that or not. Because I think the rides are provided by the campaign. But, yeah, I agree with you on both things. And I know there are some people that have said maybe a national holiday is what we need. I don't know.
They made it for everything else. Yeah. They took off everything else. Why not make that? I mean, it would make it seem like it's a more reverent kind of thing for people to say it's a voting day. Yeah. But I can't believe what I see. Even when I went to pay my taxes, here's a box. Yes, it was closed. Uh-huh. It shouldn't be sitting there.
Yeah, well,
it should be inside the building, like people have said. And it shouldn't be all hours at a time. It should be maybe open from, I don't know, 5 in the morning to whatever. But it should be monitored also. I mean, if not, we're going to have the same thing happening.
Well, we're going to see what the state comes up with. Sarah, thank you for hanging on. I appreciate it there, Sarah in West Haven. And here's a guy now who I'm sure has a few ideas about what he thinks and the Republican Party thinks about things like ballot security, those drop boxes, whatever. State Republican Party Chair Ben Proto joins us. Ben, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How you been?
I'm good, Ben. Living the dream as always. So, Ben, what do we do here? I mean, we have the video. This is going to be adjudicated. We've got local police. We've got the state police. We've got the state elections enforcement people. So it seems like there's about six different investigations already lined up here. But, Ben, let's go legislatively here. What do you think has to be done in the wake of this?
I think there's a few things that have to be done, Paul. First and foremost, the penalties, the criminal penalties for this have to be increased. No one goes to jail for this. They get a slap on the wrist. Look, you got this. The former chairman of the Democratic Party in Stanford a number of years ago was convicted on 14 counts of absentee ballot fraud in the city of Stanford and got 2 years probation.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get somebody's attention, tell them you do this, you're going to go to jail. I don't care if it's 6 months, a year, you're going to actually go to jail. You're going to be a felon. You're going to lose your job. You might lose your pension if you're a government employee. They're going to think twice about doing this. So, one, the legislature needs to increase the penalties and make it a mandatory sentence, jail sentence, for someone who does this. Because they are messing with the singular, most fundamental right American citizens have, our right to vote. Because understand something, Paul, in the city of Bridgeport, like in New Haven and in Hartford, the primary is actually the general election.
Pretty much, yeah.
So that's a given. It's a general election. So if you can steal the primary, you can steal the general election and put your people in office. That's the first thing they need to do. Second thing is we need to get rid of the ballot boxes. They serve no purpose anymore. They were put there during COVID. There might have been a legitimate reason during COVID to have those ballot boxes, but that reason no longer exists. And the legislature has all but admitted that, Paul, when they adopted the early voting program, which will go into effect next year, because you can't use a drop box to go early vote. You actually have to go to the voting place, which in most towns is going to be the town hall, and vote there in person. So if you can do that, you walk into town hall and hand your absentee ballot to the town clerk. In Stratford, I talk about this in Stratford, and I know my friends in Stratford are listening.
Mm-hmm.
The absentee ballot box in Stratford is 6 inches from the mailbox in front of town hall. You can mail your absentee ballot. You know, maybe the legislature, and I know this will be all, it's an unfunded mandate, but maybe the legislature and the state should figure out how to put postage on the return envelope to the town clerk to make it easy. You want to use this process, then make it easy, make it safe, make it secure.
And
I found it interesting.
No, go ahead.
This is what I found most interesting. Secretary Thomas, and I was very surprised she said this, and I'm hoping to God she misspoke and she corrects it.
Oh, boy.
She said one of the reasons why this happened in Bridgeport is because of bad actors and an undereducated voting population.
Yep.
Now, I hope to God she comes back and corrects what she meant by that, because I don't think she meant how it read. But that's what she said. Now, we are now blaming the people of the city of Bridgeport. When I call for more penalties and people going to jail, you know what Nancy DiNardo's response was?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, he's got Donald Trump. We go to Donald Trump. You know, it's like the squirrel. You know, squirrel, look over here. Squirrel, forget, don't look over here. And here's the problem, Paul. For years.
Nope.
When this happened, the Democrats were able to spin their way out of it. Now the whole world gets to watch the criminal act in process, and they can't spin their way out of it. Yet not a single one of them, Ganim, DiNardo, has said this woman should be charged with a crime.
Not one of them. Ben Proto is the guest. Ben Proto is the guest. He is the state Republican Party chair. He is fired up. And that quote, Ben, I had that. Ben, you read my mind. It was in my stack of stuff today. The Secretary of the State of Connecticut, Stephanie Thomas, here's the quote. She said the Bridgeport incident is about, quote, a few bad actors. All right, we can agree on that. And an undereducated electorate. Ben Proto, who's undereducated? What was she talking about?
I don't know, and I hope to God that Stephanie Thomas will clarify what she meant by that, because that is just an unbelievable insult to the people and the voters in the city of Bridgeport. That the chief election official for the state of Connecticut thinks undereducated.
Ben, you're breaking up. Ben, you there? Are you there?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
I think Nancy DiNardo was jamming your signal, but go ahead, Ben. I think she knows you're on.
I, I said, I don't know what she thinks they're undereducated about.
Yeah.
And I truly hope that Secretary Thomas will clarify that. Because I know Secretary Thomas, and I don't think she believes that. I hope she doesn't believe that as our chief elections official.
So, Ben,
this has to get fixed. There's no ifs or ands about it. And it's the Democrats who have created this system.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Democrats who abuse this system. It's the Democrats who take advantage of this system. And it's the Democrats who have to fix this system. And they refuse to do it.
So, Ben.
So the people need to stand up and call on their legislators to fix this.
Let's go back to something that I've always wondered about. And I believe during COVID there was some arguing about this. Well, we need the ballot drop boxes. Well, okay. Put them inside, assuming, Ben, for a minute that there's going to be pushback against getting rid of them. Why are they outside? And I know the argument is, well, access. Well, guess what? If you go to the bank, you have to go there in business hours, right? You don't have to drop off an absentee ballot at 5 in the morning. Look what happens. Put them inside
right.
And make it in regular business hours. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. And... the other thing is, and here is the true irony of all this, Paul, because at some point you got to look at it and find the thing you can laugh at. And here's the thing that I found hysterical in all of this.
All right.
The city of Bridgeport, the holy land of absentee ballot fraud, has surveillance cameras on all of their absentee ballot drop boxes. Everybody knows it, and they still do it.
Yeah,
so if you're not going to put them inside, if you're going to keep them outside, then you have to require they be under 24-hour video surveillance.
Well, it did.
You have to, we just saw what that does.
It apparently didn't stop anything, Ben. I mean, call me crazy, but I don't know.
I think the culture is such that we always get away with it, and even when we get caught, we just get a slap on the wrist, so it's no big deal. Well, she's now on administrative leave. What I don't know is if she's on paid administrative leave or unpaid administrative leave, because she's a city employee. And she was also involved in the 2019 absentee ballot issue that now has three of Ganim's campaign workers having been referred to the chief state's attorney. You had the 2017... city council primary that Judge Bellis ordered rerun twice because of absentee ballot problems. You have the Hennessy Brown primary in Bridgeport in 2022 that a court ordered to be rerun because of absentee ballot problems. And here's the interesting thing, Paul.
Yeah.
I was talking with another reporter yesterday, and he told me that he's been looking at all of the absentee ballot cases on this Elections Enforcement Commission site.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, did you notice they all have one thing in common? They all have one thing in common. And he said, what's that? I said, every respondent is a Democrat. I said, find me one where there's a Republican who's done this.
And
he looked at it. Well, he didn't look over on the phone. I can hear him just pause for a minute. And he said, oh, yeah.
Well, Ben, listen, be good. I'm sure as this unfolds in the special session, we'll talk down the road. Thank you, Ben. Be good.
Thanks. And they're going to be looking to put the monitor in.
Yes. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Absolutely.
All right.
Paul, thanks for having me on, as always. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks,
buddy.
Ben. Appreciate it. Thanks. I had to kind of struggle through a little rough connection there, but you got it. Yeah, and by the way, there is a great story you can read, Mark Pazniokas' story in the Connecticut Mirror. And lest you think we're pounding on Bridgeport, folks, no. How about this story? And this is in the Connecticut Mirror, which is a left-leaning, it's a good publication, but it's a liberal publication. The Connecticut Mirror, which is basically run by a bunch of former Hartford Current people. Here's the headline, Absentee Ballots Use... Possible abuse is called an art form in Bridgeport. So don't bury the messengers here, folks. We're just doing our job. All righty, back to open phones a bit later on to wrap this whole thing up. And when we do that, it'll be a 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Dan Hart joins us for his weekly check-in. Editor, columnist, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan has an interesting piece on a local tie-in and a local picket line related to the SAG-AFTRA walkout. But we'll first, Dan, talk about, well, the big elephant in the room and every other animal, the Bridgeport absentee ballot situation. Good to have you back. What are your thoughts on this, Dan?
Well, a number of thoughts. First of all, it's beyond the point where Bridgeport can sort of handle this thing itself, and it is likely, as I reported last night and today, that there will be an election monitor over the Bridgeport election from this point on, starting next Tuesday, when the state legislature is likely to vote to fix a glitch. They thought they had funded an election monitor for this year, and they messed it up in the wording, and they have to fix that so that there is an election monitor. So that's one thing. Another is what we learned this morning, that we have four complaints underway at the State Elections Enforcement Commission. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that'll keep folks busy. That's on top of the investigation that's already underway from 2019. So overlapping from two different mayoral elections, all of this is related to absentee ballots.
So, Dan, is this now the point, finally? Because you talked about 2019, and there have been other, you know, isolated incidents of this in other cities and towns in the state, though not all that many. But because we now have video, Dan, is this different? Does this finally jolt the people in Hartford into saying, okay, we need absentees, but we really have to lock down security here, or not?
No, it's still a largely partisan debate. If you're talking about in the big picture, you're talking about absentee ballots being available to anyone who wants them. And are you saying that if you're asking whether this is going to jolt people into slowing down in the effort to make absentee ballots available to anyone who wants them, the answer is no. If this is a jolt in the sense that we have to be careful, mm-hmm. Not on the policy, but on the practice,
yeah,
then the answer is yes, maybe. But I think there's a tendency to see this as an isolated incident, as we saw in the comments Monday from the Secretary of the State, who said as much. This is an isolated incident of some bad actors, she said. She said some other things that got her into a little trouble, but that's another issue. So there are a number of different layers of this going on. The first thing we have to realize is that use of absentee ballots in Connecticut has been very limited, mm-hmm. and in the liberalization of absentee ballots in the COVID era, or post-COVID era as we are in now, although there is still COVID, in that liberalization, there is the opportunity for campaigns to be much more aggressive about how they use absentee ballots. I equate this to what happened with Uber in livery and taxi service, and what happened with Airbnb with lodging.
Yeah.
Right? These disruptions pushed the envelope of what those services mean. And by the same token, the Ganim campaign, and to a lesser degree the Gomes campaign in Bridgeport, have pushed the envelope of how to use absentee ballots. Rather than just passively, like we saw in Hartford, for example, with the mayoral primary there, nobody made a big effort to get absentee ballots into anyone's hands. If they did, it was lower key. And so you just say, okay, if somebody wants an absentee ballot, we'll help them get the application. And if they send it in, great. But in Bridgeport, it becomes an organized effort to make absentee ballots the deciding factor. Mm-hmm. That's not illegal in and of itself, and that's part of what we're seeing.
But the old adage, Dan Haar, you know, perception is reality, and you and I know that, and your end of the business and mine. I think, Dan, people are going to want to see some sort of reaction to this, and I don't know what that'll be, what lawmakers can do, changing or tightening, or the envelope, as you say. Do we tighten it up? Do we make it a bigger, tighter envelope? I think, Dan, finally, again, because of that video, people are going to say, all right, come on, now do something. Maybe I could be wrong.
The video is going to be, it's easy to look at it and draw conclusions, but when it comes to actual jurisprudence and adjudicating what happened, you know, we're not going to be able to see what the people in the video did, and we're not going to know that. And so I don't know what they're going to say. There may be loopholes. There may be explanations. We're just going to have to wait and see. I agree with you 100% that there's going to be tight scrutiny of what happened in Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. I disagree that this is going to lead to any kind of tighter regulations or practices in respect to absentee ballots statewide, because the establishment, mostly on the Democratic side but not entirely, continues to believe that this is an isolated incident of accusation and potential wrongdoing, although everyone is clear to say that nothing has been proven.
You may be right. Dan, you also authored a piece regarding the SAG-AFTRA strike. That strike goes on. Now, a lot of people may say, well, you know, I don't care. I'm living my life. But you you did illustrate a rather interesting local angle on this.
Yeah, I mean, there are several hundred SAG-AFTRA members who are working in movies in Connecticut. Over the last 30 years, Connecticut has worked hard to increase its presence of filmmaking, movie making, feature filmmaking. Hallmark is a big user of Connecticut, and the tax credits here are not as rich as they are in some states, but they're rich enough to get a little piece of the industry, and those people are out on strike. And what the surprise is that I wrote is that the strike has lasted this long. I think I was surprised, and many of the members were surprised to see that it has lasted this long. The studios are simply not negotiating, according to the strikers, and that's, we have no reason to doubt that. There's no evidence that the studios are negotiating. So the effort that the actors have is to persuade people that, in the words of one of them, a former defender named Clancy, she's making the point that everybody is not Meryl Streep and you know, pick your favorite actor. You know, these are working people making working wages.
Yeah, it is. Dan, I have a friend of mine who was on a Disney Plus streaming series that just got canceled. But, you know, her main gig is what I do. She does radio in L.A., but she's always had the acting bug, and she landed a, you know, a couple of side supporting cast characters in some streaming series. But, you know, she told me what you probably heard from these people is that, what is it? There's some figure like 87% of SAG-AFTRA members don't even make enough for health care, which is only like $27,000 a year. And you're right. Unfortunately, I think the overwhelming perception is if you're an actor, you're getting rich. You're not. You're just not.
Well, that's right. And in fairness to the other side, these are not people that are working 40 hours a week. These are part-time gigs. Mm-hmm. Somebody will work on maybe, you know, for example, one person I talked with had worked on 10 or 12 films a year, which is a lot. Not all in Connecticut, but that's, you know, in New England. And that's a lot, but that's not 40-hour-a-week full-time work. A person like that will make a living and will get health care if they're really working on 12 films a year. But nonetheless, it's not highly lucrative work if you are a walk-on, or typically someone will be a character. Like, let's say there's a horse and buggy. The actor, the SAG member, will be the driver mm-hmm. of the horse and of the buggy, and maybe will have one or two lines just saying, we're off.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Maybe there'll be a 3-second close-up on that person, you know, as we see. So it's not a starring role, but that's a working, and you're on the set, you're working, and you're there for 10 hours. You know, it's tough. It ain't easy.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I'm looking forward to when your agent gets you on one of these streaming series, and then we'll be able to, you know, just the way we promoted your debate appearance the other night, we can debate you on, you know, the next big streaming series. Sound good?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned streaming, because the reason people should care about this is this strike. Mm-hmm. This strike is about the advancing technologies of AI, artificial intelligence, and streaming, and how those revenues are allocated. And that affects a whole lot more people than just actors. It affects anyone in any creative pursuit. And so it's really about how society views these residual, and I don't mean residual like movie residual, but that's part of it, these residual images and work that are out there, like my stories and your radio broadcast. So there's a big issue at stake, and that's what they're fighting for.
Absolutely. Dan Haar, good to chat with you. Dan, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Drive safely.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Dan. Thank Appreciate you. It. Yep, Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut Media. And again, you know, I know a lot of people say, you know, these actors, actresses. No, I mean, listen, there has to be, and I'm glad Dan pointed that out, the SAG-AFTRA members are putting up front something that could affect hundreds of thousands of people more. And I know, you know, the tendency is, as Dan said, oh, everybody's Robert De Niro, everybody is Meryl Streep, everybody is you know, Samuel L. Jackson, worth hundreds of millions of dollars, but they're not. They're the common person who enjoys acting as a craft, but like my friend who Jackie Lauper, who we had on here a couple of months ago, her full-time gig is, well, number one, she's got a bunch of kids. Number two, she lives in L.A. She's a radio traffic and news person out there, but she's always had the acting bug. She did some stuff here in Connecticut. In fact, I think she did some sort of Hallmark stuff that, you know, Dan was talking about, moved out to L.A. He's been on a couple of series. But it is fundamentally not fair. And this is where I do come down to the sides of unions. You know, I'm not a typical conservative host that says, well, screw the unions. No. Now, to be up front here, at one time I was an active SAG-AFTRA member. My membership has been on pause for, 30 years. Because I was doing stuff that was airing on New York City radio stations, working in New Jersey, and the contract for these stations said, well, anybody who enters our air, even if it's from a vendor, they have to be a SAG-AFTRA member in good standing. Now, back when I was a member, there were two different units. So I was, and I guess technically still am, in the American Federation of TV and Radio Announcers. All right? SAG was the Screen Actors Guild, and those two unions merged about 20 years ago. But, no, Dan's right. Listen, you know, is this going to push the studios to say, basically, if you're not a top-tier performer, you know, a top 10 or 15 name, are they going to say, well, screw that, we'll deal with the top 10 or 15 people, and everybody else is going to be a computerized character created by artificial intelligence? It's already starting to happen in a lot of businesses.